Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life, all wrapped up into one lovable package, Glenn Klein online on a beautiful day in Tampa Bay for Two for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020, the only 10-20 2-0-2-0 in the history of humanity. Let us continue to choose on purpose, with a purpose, to give a great Tuesday. We have Two for Tuesday. We got two nice Jewish boys online. Our special guest is waiting patiently right now in the great state of Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, please welcome to Glenn Klein Online the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party for the United States of America, Jeremy Spike Cohen. Spike!
Hey, Glenn, thanks so much for having me on. I'm happy to be on with a fellow nice Jewish boy.
Thanks for being had. Funniest Absolutely, thing that has happened to you on the campaign trail so far?
Oh, gosh. Let's think. These are the kind of gotcha questions I'm not used to. Let's see. Funniest thing that has happened on the campaign trail. These are the ones that stump me. Someone asked me a question about the VA or healthcare or something else.
Right.
I immediately rattle off a very intelligent and articulate and groundbreaking answer. But then I'm asked about like something like, you know, who would you like to play you in a movie? And I sit here dumbfounded. Gosh, what's something that's funny that's happened? I think just the sheer number of inside jokes that happened on the bus tour that made absolutely no sense to anyone else even after we try to deconstruct them. But when you are like severely limited in your ability to get rest on a regular basis during a bus tour, everything just becomes really, really funny when you're around the same people. Here's one. On yesterday, I had an unexpected day off in Miami. And as a result of the fact that my Baton Rouge event got canceled because of the flooding that happened after the hurricane that hit that area. And so without expectation, you know, without being knowing about, I was told the day before, oh, you're going to have a day off in Miami. And I haven't been on the beach the entire time during this campaign. And so I ended
up, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well.
I know something.
Yeah, my Bluetooth died.
Yeah, but it actually sounds better now that your Bluetooth died.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So I ended up at the beach all day. And I was making live streams and calling people almost angrily because I finally got to actually have a day on the beach. Most summers I'm on the beach every single day. I live in Myrtle Beach. This summer because of summer and fall because of the campaigning, I was never able to actually go to the beach. So I got a lot of catch up there, and I was almost angry about it. I was swimming almost like I was trying to catch up, make up for lost time. So that was pretty funny. I'm sure that there are much funnier things, but I'm honestly drawing a blank right now. That was an incredible gotcha question.
I'm a little disappointed in the lack of Jewish humor.
I know I'm forgetting many, many funny things right. that I'll regret.
Something is going to come to your mind. This is a long-form
sure.
podcast. I want to let all the beautiful humans know that Spike is the Libertarians presidential or 2020 vice presidential nominee, running, of course, with Dr. Joe Jorgensen. He is a promoter of the vision of common sense libertarian solutions that will make us all more free, safe, and prosperous. You started a company, it says here, Spike, in 1999, a web design company. Then you retired from, did you just make a shitload of money 3 years ago?
Yeah, I reached a point here's what the catalyst was for my retiring. In 2014, half of my body went numb, and that started a 2-year process that eventually led to my discovering that I had multiple sclerosis. And when the doctor was talking to me about my treatment options, He said, well, you know, the purpose of your MS treatment is to try to slow your progression of MS so that it's not much different than just the general aging, just the, you know, usual aging process that we all go through. That was supposed to make me feel good. It actually hit me like a ton of bricks and put me into an existential crisis, because I realized in that moment that we're all slowly working our way towards not just no longer being here, but in the meantime, you know, being less than, even if we're, you know, very healthy. And even if we try our best to stay on top of things, you know, we are working our way to no longer being here. And you know, that's something that we often don't think about because it's very depressing and frightening. So we kind of shut it out. And it was something that I had spent so long just making money and focusing on making money, growing my business, making money, getting big deals, you know, closing big clients, you know, harpooning big whales and making lots of money. And in that moment, I realized that I was living a life that was purposeless other than to just make money. And I had a great passion for sharing the message of human liberty, but it always took a back burner, a far, far back burner to just making money, making money, making money. In that moment, I thought, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to walk, to talk, to see, to hear, to be able to, you know, fully function. And for as long as I can, I want to spend the rest of my life on my real passion, which is sharing the message of liberty. That's going to be my new venture in life. And it's going to focus on, you know, sharing a message of liberty as opposed to just trying to earn a living, which there's nothing wrong with trying to earn a living, but I'd reached a point where I didn't have to worry about that anymore.
So you activism
and podcasting. And
so you did make a shitload of money is what you're saying.
I tend to be coy about specific numbers, but I don't have to work anymore.
But you're working your ass off, except for yesterday's beach visit to Miami.
With the exception of yesterday's beach visit, I now work for free about 18 hours a day.
Was that at South Beach?
Yes, we actually went to South Beach.
Right,
we had a salsa party. It was a rally it was supposed to be an indoor rally, but the police shut down our venue.
Yes,
pretty sure it was for political reasons. Yeah. And so it turned into a rally / lockdown, anti-lockdown protest / salsa and bachata illegal block party right on the corner of Calle Ocho. We did that till about 1 a.m. Then I woke up and went straight to South Beach and swam in the ocean for like 4 hours.
That sounds.
I got very, very sunburned.
I was going to ask about the sunburn. You just went straight, no SPF or anything, huh?
Yeah, no, I went straight in. And it was a little bit overcast, so I was like, you know what? I'm from Myrtle Beach. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to feel fine all day tomorrow. I'm going to regret it, but I you know, I'm going to live in no regrets. And I actually don't regret it. I definitely feel the burn today, but it was more than worth it. The anyone who hasn't swam in South Beach, if you enjoy swimming, there is nothing on the continental U.S. like that. It is absolutely amazing. You have to go to the Caribbean to get anything resembling that. It was more than worth it.
We have the nicest beaches in the country here in Tampa Bay, you know.
Oh.
By far.
Well, you know what? And that's what I'm told. I'm told that I need to stop sleeping on the Gulf Coast beaches, too. So I probably need to check those out.
Yes, you do. And, of course, the vitamin D that we get from the sun is critical in fighting off the COVID, you know. They don't want to talk about that.
Oh, absolutely.
I wrote a book.
No, in fact, interestingly enough, so what is it they told us during this lockdown? Everyone stay inside. But here's the thing. The reason, Glenn, that we know that the reason why the cold and flu spread so much during the colder months is because everyone's inside more often. So it's counterintuitive that everyone staying inside is actually going to do anything to slow the spread. Wonder of wonders that it really hasn't done anything to slow the spread and that the spread is still continuing. It turns out that it would actually be better. It was no less than the World Health Organization that said a few days ago that the lockdowns have utterly failed to do anything other than increase poverty, increase suicide, increase substance abuse, and increase mental health problems.
And domestic violence. Let's not forget that one.
Domestic violence as well. All of the bad societal things.
All right, so here's what happens. Here's what happens to me. I write a book about this. I started posting right from the get-go. See, I'm old. You're young. Are you going to like live for a while, do you think? I mean, as far as the MS is concerned, what are your doctors saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, if anything, I may just, you know, where most people would, you know, stop walking in their 80s, I might stop walking in my 60s, unless a cure comes between
now and then.
No, but in terms of life expectancy, I should live.
Yeah, you sound very, very strong. You look strong. You're handsome as all get out. And
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. But I'm old. I'm going to be 61. And I've been around the block a couple of times. In fact, well, I'll get to my libertarian roots momentarily, but I started posting about the pandemic right from the get-go, blogging about it. It wasn't making any sense to me. I mean, like literally from the start, before New York shut down, before California shut down, before Fauci, before we knew who Anthony Fauci was. It wasn't making any sense to me. I caught holy hell for it. I mean, people were clearly in freakout mode right from the get-go. And I wrote a book. You can get it on Amazon, et cetera. It's called Early Wake-Up Call, How a Coach's Early Warnings About the Pandemic Can Help You Now. And it started out as a blog, a series of blogs. And then as I was watching, I made a bunch of predictions in the blog. And as I'm watching this shit go down, I'm like, how the hell did I know this? I'm not that smart. And by the way, I'm not near as smart as Spike Cohn, folks. Don't worry about it. And you know, my normal listeners all over the planet know that I'm not that smart. But I do know a couple things. And I put it in the book. Well, it becomes a book because the predictions that I made in the blog were actually coming to pass. And right. I was like, well, how the hell did I know this? And then it occurred to me, all I did with the pandemic is I applied libertarian and life principles that I've been coaching and parent. I have six kids, and I used to own a summer camp, a residential summer camp in northern Wisconsin. And then I've been a full-time life coach and relationship coach for the last 15 years. And all I did on the pandemic was apply those principles to this. Libertarian principles are a huge part of it. It's been a huge part of my philosophy for my entire life. I met Harry Brown, the 1996 and 2000 libertarian presidential nominee in 1999. And we became very good friends. And I co-hosted his show on Radio America. He was on my show all the time. What do you know much about Harry? I mean, you're a young whippersnapper. How old are you now? 38?
I am 38. I'm an old millennial, but yeah, I'm 38. I had the pleasure of meeting Harry, but I know a lot about him.
You have you heard Harry? Have you read Harry? Harry was like 6'4" ish. I mean, just incredibly handsome. And he always well dressed, and he always had the libertarian pin, you know, in his lapel, and I mean. When I met Harry Brown, I was like, I finally met somebody that could have been a founding father of this country. That's how I think about Harry Brown. And unfortunately, Harry contracted ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. But what a guy, man. I mean, oh my God. What a dude. I mean, and you talk about a sense of humor and being able to find the humor in the middle of all this craziness. I mean, Harry Brown, I can't recommend his books and his websites enough. So all that was that's what informed me in my formative years, and so I wrote the book Early Wake Up Call. So that's my little plug on that book. I got to ask you, Spike. You are barely old enough to be president. So I mean, how optimistic are you? I mean, you got your whole freaking life ahead of you, and I firmly believe that things are going to advance technologically and medically. So you're going to live way beyond. If everything else goes okay, beyond what they're saying in the 60s, as far as being able to get around, how optimistic?
I agree.
Yeah,
with
you. You're a smart guy. Obviously, you'll figure it out. But how optimistic are you for this country? Not the world, but for this country.
I'm optimistic because I have talked to people across this country. Even before I started this tour, I've been talking online with my podcast and now with this campaign with people around the country. And what I am seeing is an increasing number of people who are just fed up, not just with the Republicans, not just with the Democrats, not just with the duopoly, but with the entire idea that their life is best lived with people, their so-called betters, telling them how to live their life. They are increasingly realizing, and through the trial by fire of experiencing that type of arrangement, realizing that no, they are best. They live their life is best lived when they are most free, when they are most able and most allowed to be able to live their lives, when they are most unencumbered by being robbed or being taken, having their power or their freedom, their money taken from them, when barriers and burdens that are put in place, expressly put in place to make their life harder, are removed so that they can thrive and be able to voluntarily come up with solutions to the problems that they're facing and have far fewer problems to deal with in the first place because they're not being created by government and its abuses and excesses. I'm very, very hopeful for America. And for that matter, I'm very hopeful for humanity. I believe that I wouldn't be running for elected office if I wasn't hopeful and optimistic for humanity and for this country. I believe that we are entering into a new era that is going to be run by, that is going to be fueled by these younger generations who we have been raised on anti-authoritarian consent culture for all of the, impulses that we may have and so forth. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we don't want to be told what to do. We want to have a choice and a say in everything that we do. We want to only do things that we have consented to and never have anything imposed upon us. And I think that that is the building block and the foundation for a new era that we are starting, not just in this country, but in humanity in general, an era of people saying, no, I will live my life as I please, harming no one else and working in cooperation with those who wish to cooperate with me. And we are going to thrive and prosper.
You got that down great, bro. That was amazing.
I literally just said that as that's not like a
that is
thing.
That
I really
is, oh, come on, dude, that is your total stump speech. Come on.
No, I've literally never said. I defy you to find me having said that.
I will not. I'm a little aroused right now. I got to admit, that was fucking amazing. That was amazing. All right, that's a true story. All right, let's back up a little bit here. In the book, Early Wake Up Call, I go into a lot of detail about a lot of the type of things that you're talking about. We know, for example, that the preponderance of surveys on political issues, just let's take the United States of America. That's my Barack Obama impression. Were you impressed?
I honestly didn't know where you were going with it. I thought it was a play on how of is spelled.
He added the of America because usually they would say God bless America. He would say God bless the United States of America. My audience is used to that.
I now hear the Obama and I didn't before.
That is just fine. The survey after survey indicates that most Americans are libertarian. I mean, yes. But having said that, 88% of Americans either wear their mask all the time or part of the time or most of the time. I've never worn a mask one time. And I live in Florida. We've all had lockdowns except in South Dakota. Don't you got to love some Governor Noem. I mean, even though she's a Republican, you got to love her. A little bit, right?
Are we talking about Kristi Noem?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think that, she is saying to people, listen, we are South Dakota. And by the way, I was in last month, I was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And it was very interesting how things were pretty much like how they've always been there. It was a very interesting dynamic.
No, she's done an amazing job.
All right. For the most part, everyone was just living.
Right, exactly. Like living like a normal freaking life. But the fact of the matter is 88% of Americans wear a mask all the time or most of the time. Only 12% do not wear it at all. I'm one of them. And it's been hard. It's other than being in South Dakota. I'm Florida. We were shut down for a long time. Their masks are still mandatory where I live in Hillsborough County. So, I mean, how do you jive with the fact that most Americans by issues are libertarian and yet they're willing to freaking just adhere to this compliance? And I think that the media and the government and the medical bureaucracy has done a great job in freaking everybody out.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think people are going with what they are told is the best information. Specific to masks, I just want to, clarify with myself. I wear masks in two situations. One, in a situation where an establishment is asking me to wear a mask in their establishment, either because they personally believe that it is an effective thing that needs to be done, or because they just don't want to get in trouble. And then the other situation is if I'm interacting with someone who is wearing a mask and feels uncomfortable with my not wearing a mask, I typically will wear it just to make them feel that level of comfort. And that's really a choice that I am making for the consent and comfort of someone else. With that said, I think that when you look at most people who will either give in to authoritarian impulses or who will agree with authoritarian ideas, like, for example, universal health care or government-run schooling or government-run higher education or something like that, it's coming from a place of fear. It's either fear of the unknown, fear of dying, fear of harm, fear of, you know, with the case of universal health care, fear of, you know, not being able to afford getting care, fear of ending up in a hospital with an accident or a chronic health issue and being ruined financially for the rest of their lives as a result. You know, government has learned to weaponize fear. It is why we are in a constant state of crisis. It is why they will say something like, instead of, you know, increasingly, the Republicans don't even bother debating us in our ideas. Instead, they'll go, yeah, well, you know, third parties are great, but it's far too important right now. We're in far too much of a crisis to vote third party right now, which incidentally is no different than an abusive spouse telling, his wife, you can't leave me. Look at the mess we're in right now. Well, yeah, we're in that mess because of you. It's gaslighting. But the point of that is the Republicans, the authoritarians, the cronies, they have learned to weaponize fear. They have learned to make people feel fear, make people experience acute, real, immediate fear, and create a system of crisis, a constant, perpetual series of crises that replace one another so that we always feel like we are not. That's why we keep hearing the new normal. The new normal is essentially just always being scared and then finding out however many months or years later that it was either made up or overblown, or that the things we were told that would help actually were more harmful than did good every single time. You said, how are you able to predict this? Because this is how it always turns
right.
out.
Right. But Andrew Cuomo literally said that early on. He said the new normal will include the anxiety and the fear. He literally, yep. I directly quote him in the book. And then my response to the governor of the great state of New York was, fuck that shit. I mean, I won't play. I'm sorry, you guys. Well, my audience knows that I don't play. So I want to respect your time. I have to ask you, how exhausted are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
So I have to answer that honestly. I haven't slept in 48 hours, and I feel fantastic. I am so empowered and so energized when I get to interact with libertarians who are excited about this race and about the future for the movement and the party, and getting to interact with people that aren't libertarian yet and are discovering that they're libertarian in real time.
Yes, they actually are. All right. So, all right.
They're talking with me.
So here's what's going to happen in a little over 2 weeks.
Okay.
Nobody's going to be declared the winner on November 3rd. The Jorgensen-Cohn ticket is not going to win. And is there a level of deception? I've interviewed every libertarian candidate since Harry Brown, Gary Johnson, who I love. We Gary and I got hammered together one night. It was an amazing time. It was really fun. And what a great guy he is. God, if he wouldn't have screwed up that one question. I can't even remember what the topic was.
Aleppo.
Aleppo. Oh my God! Of course.
They were asking him about stuff.
I know. I know. But
they throw Aleppo
in. I know. And he's such a
good. That was a total
gotcha. He's such a good guy, and he's such. I mean, he was the New Mexico governor. The man won re-election. I want to say that he vetoed like 497 bills, and none of them were overridden. Something crazy like that when he was the governor of New Mexico. Anyway, I love the guy. But in any case, you know you're not going to win. But is there part of you that thinks like, well, there's some anticipation that some miracle could happen? How does that work? I've never been in your shoes that way.
So you started to ask before, is there deception? And no, there isn't, and here's why. I am very frank with people about what we face, what our odds are, how the chips are stacked against us by the Republicans and by the federal election and state election boards, by the crony media, by the rigged debate system and all of that. And I never guarantee we're going to win anything. Here is what I say. I have never done an undertaking in the 20-plus years of my adulthood. I have never done any undertaking that I was not trying to win. I do not believe in trying to fail well. I believe in trying to win, with the understanding that we don't always win. We often don't win. And so I am running a campaign. Joe and I are running a campaign all the way to the end that is built upon trying to win the election. We know what the odds are. We know what we face. But I don't believe that I can energize a crowd and get people excited about pushing for liberty if I come out and go, hey, folks, let's try to lose as good as we ever have, huh? Like, I believe that we need to try to win. We understand what our odds are. If we fall short of that goal, far better than we've done before, and we can build on that momentum in the future.
I talked to Harry about this number. I just think that we have to step way out of the box. Here's what I think the next you very well could be the next libertarian presidential nominee in 2024, obviously. I just think we need to go way out of the box to get attention. Because here's the thing. Ross Perot, don't forget, was on The Verge. You know the history of that. You were a young...
I know the history.
Okay.
He would have been elected president in 92 if he'd actually wanted to win it. That's why he dropped out. He just wanted to hurt George Bush. Well, and when he saw he was actually leading in the polls after the debate, he dropped out for a few weeks.
And it worked. It worked really well.
It worked very well.
Yes. And that's why we got Bill Clinton for two terms, because of Ross Perot.
Right.
And for some reason, Ross Perot had a hard-on for George H.W. Bush. I mean, who knows? They're both from Texas. Who the hell knows? But I think that there has to be a level of stepping out of the box. And I have this vision of the libertarian presidential candidate with a huge billboard of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, and doing like a star, I don't know, just being on top of a billboard for like 60 days. Just something, just anything different to draw attention to the libertarian cause. Because obviously what we're doing thus far is not making enough of a dent. Now, we do have some pretty significant and some deep pockets that might be get behind something like that. People that have you know, billions of dollars who are libertarians, but they won't want to step out until somebody's willing to step out of the box themselves. So I will, I'm now volunteering for Spike Cohn 2024 presidential race. I will be your campaign manager or your spokesman, or I'll just drive the frickin' bus. I don't give a shit. But, I have to ask you one more question. You got another minute for me?
Yeah, I can take one more question.
All right. Here's another question. I have many people, as I promote the libertarian cause and the Jorgensen Cohn campaign, they say there's never been a government in the history of the world that's been libertarian. And they say that because that verifies that this concept of ours doesn't work. You've heard this. What's your retort to that?
Well, my retort to that is that there have been many times that governments and individuals have engaged in libertarian policies that have done good. We also have seen when they've done the opposite of libertarian policies, authoritarian policies, that have led to massive harm. I will also say this. There was once a time that humanity never existed without people owning each other as chattel slaves. There was once a time where humanity never existed through any kind of trade apparatus, and all commerce was basically done through violent theft and tribal warfare. There was once a time when there was never a government that was actually elected as a result of the choice of the people under the presumed jurisdiction of that government. It was always by divine law, divine right, or just by, you know, force of might who was in charge. There have always been times that there have always been things that never happened until they happened. I believe that the time for human liberty is now. I would not be running if I didn't think so. I am not doing this for naked political ambition. If I were doing this for naked political ambition, I wouldn't be doing it with the Libertarian Party, right? If I were doing this for money, I certainly wouldn't be doing it for the Libertarian Party, and I'm not making any money. I am doing this because I believe that this party, this movement, is the beginning of the spark of the catalyst that will lead to the driving of the engine of human liberty for this country and for the world, for humanity moving forward. And I would not be doing this if I did not believe that. I see it every single day. And I see, we have seen long before this movement started in earnest, we have seen every single time that government grants more power to the people that they do better. And we have seen every time that government takes power from the people that they do worse. That alone, and the morality behind our belief system, that you do not hurt people, you do not take their things, that you do not try to force them into things that they don't want to do, that alone is the reason for me to continue fighting forward. And I ask everyone who is listening to this to join me in building that army of human liberty, fighting for nothing less than a world set free in our time. And I believe, Glenn, that our time is now.
I agree, Spike. And by the way, for you guys that are not, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to post this on the Tuesday. And it's going to drop, and I'm going to get all this bullshit about some of the past comments you've had and all the stuff and the missed reporting and the lack of sense of humor. You guys, don't do that. I'm going to delete your comments, because we've now been talking to Spike for about 30 minutes, and if you're not significantly more impressed with the vice presidential candidate of the Libertarian Party than you are with the four major candidates in the Democrats and the Republicans, I have nothing to say to you. This man is more articulate than Donald Trump and Joe Biden combined. Thank you for doing
which
this,
is
sir.
Not a, which incidentally is not a high hurdle.
No, it's not. You're right. That is absolutely there. Now that's the funniest comment on the campaign thus far, for sure. and a very true statement. Hey, thank you for doing this. I want to encourage everybody to go to Spike's website and My Fellow Americans. He's the co-host of the Muddied Waters of Freedom and the co-owner of Muddy Waters Media. It's a podcast platform that reaches multiple millions. And let's do this thing, bro. Let's just get, I mean, for no other reason than I love the philosophy, and it's really the undergirding philosophy of my life. And it's from the ancient text, it was for freedom that we were set free. And so there's nothing better to fight for than maximum freedom, which includes, of course, from a libertarian perspective, personal responsibility. If freedom, liberty, and the fact that we take personal responsibility for our own lives as best we can. And I'm so proud of you, man. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. And thank you, Glenn. And thank you, everyone, for your support. It means a lot to me, man. Thank you.
There he goes, Jeremy Spike Cohen. How are you not impressed with that guy? I saw a meme and I've shared it several times. It had a picture of Trump and Biden, and it said that neither of these two are lesser evils enough to vote for. I don't think that Biden and Trump are evil. I don't think anybody's evil. I think we're all perfect, righteous, and holy. Referencing the, it was for freedom we were set free. It's a spiritual condition. We are all righteous. If we knew that, if we thought about it, if we talked about it more, I think that our, in fact, I know that our behavior would be different. It all starts with a thought. Having said that, the reason I share it is because I think that their philosophical bent, which is pretty much narcissistic and controlling and power hungry, is really ill-advised and ineffective. Joe Jorgensen and Spike Cohen are onto something, and the Libertarian Party, or the libertarians in general, are onto freedom. And that's why I support. I can't do a Republican or a Democrat a vote anymore. I haven't done it in a long time. Democrats. The last Democrat or Republican that I voted for was Barack Obama in 2008. Because I actually, here's what I think. I know that to do things the same way and expect different results is insane. So when Obama ran against John McCain in 2008, I knew that if McCain won, that nothing was going to be different. And Obama was different. I mean, if nothing else, the first black president, come on, let's go. And I actually kind of, he persuaded me that we're not blue states, we're not red states, we're the United States of America. And I was wrong. He was just like the rest. He was worse than the rest in a lot of ways. He was a dyed-in-the-wool Chicago politician. I grew up in Chicago under the Mayor Daley regime. I understand what they were all about and what they're still all about in Chicago. You do what you got to do. You say what you got to say to get elected and to gain power. And Obama did it. And he was an awful president. So has this one been. Obama led to Trump. And it's very possible that Trump is going to lead to Biden, and that's going to be a nightmare. Whoever gets elected is looking at a shit show like nobody's business in 2021. I love politics, man. I love it because it's real political and human drama in real time. You get to actually watch people under the stress of life. Strategies and competition and winning and losing and saying shit they ought not say. Oh my God, I love this stuff. Well, I can't recommend Jorgensen Cohn 2020 enough, but obviously you'll do what you want to do. But I talked to Spike offline and he's already committed to come back on here. At least one more time between now and November 3rd. Which we will not know who the president is when we go to bed. We used to when we were kids. Remember that, you guys? For you guys who are old enough, we'd go to bed. We'd know who the president was the next day. It's not that way anymore. It's not going to be that way on November 3rd, I don't think. I might be wrong. It's rare. It's rare. But even when I'm wrong, I'm right. And so are you, because you are right to us. You're righteous, as is everybody. Well, let me hear from you at coach@glennklineonline.com. It would be great to hear from you. Also want to encourage you to check out our other podcast at sexinthepews.com, celebrating healthy human sexuality and exposing the historic ill effects of sex by religion. Yeah, it's a huge part of our mandate here at Life and Pleasure Communications, LLC. At coachglennkline.com, you can log on and get the early wake-up call. You can get that at Amazon and Kindle, etc. Also, subscribe to the G-Spot blog at coachglennkline.com. We will do it all again next time. And until that time, this is Glenn Kline Online saying, Shalom, everybody!